taken under advisement. And we're going to go on to the last case of the day, and that's 012977, Doris S. Applebaum versus the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewage District. And Mr. Scott.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is James Scott, and I'm here on behalf of the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewage District. With me at council table is Thomas Crawford, a staff attorney with the district who tried this case below. We are asking the court today to reverse the decision of Judge Curran denying our motion under Rule 50 and to find that, in fact, there is not substantial evidence to support the verdict of intentional age discrimination that was rendered in this case. The Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewage District is a public agency consisting of, or made up by the city of Milwaukee and the suburbs to operate the sewage system in the Milwaukee metropolitan area. In the mid-90s, the district made the decision to privatize a rare occurrence in the public sector, but this resulted in a great deal of unsettlement amongst employees. It was a time of great turmoil in the workforce, and a new human resources director was brought in, an individual by the name of Don Schieffer, who was a management labor attorney with the district, and he became the HR director. One of the things that Mr. Schieffer's pet peeves was his insistence that the members of his staff maintain confidentiality amongst the decisions and various information that they were privy to. Schieffer adopted a one strike and you're out zero tolerance approach to leaks of confidential information. Doris Applebaum, the plaintiff in this case, ran afoul of that rule. This is one of those rare employment cases, or at least employment discharge cases, in which both parties agree as to what occurred and what fact led to the discharge.
Well, not exactly. It seems to me that the district has been somewhat inconsistent in its rationale for Ms. Applebaum's discharge, because we have Mr. McCabe upholding her discharge on the basis of her allegedly poor performance as well as her breach of confidentiality, but at trial we have Mr. Schieffer asserting that her performance played zero role in her termination.
Well, Mr. Schieffer was the decision maker, and those were the facts that he presented to Mr. McCabe at the hearing. I would submit that presenting two reasons that are not inconsistent does not in and of itself create an inconsistency in the district's position.
But disavowing the fact that you earlier gave a reason could allow a jury to think that the decision maker isn't being straight with it. I mean, that he one day he says, well, it's two things, it's, you know, confidentiality breach and poor performance, and then he gets on the hot seat in the trial and says, oh, no, performance has nothing to do with it, and the jury might think, well, what are we supposed to believe here?
Well, I would concede that may well have been the jury's conclusion, but I don't think that is...
And that he changed position.
But that isn't the type of change of position I think that this court has contemplated in other decisions. Had he said, I'm firing you for attendance, and then at the hearing said, well, it's for a breach of confidentiality, I think that's a true change or an inconsistency in position. He was the one that realized that perhaps he hadn't followed the guidelines with relative to performance as strictly as or evaluation, and decided not to rely on the poor performance. He did testify at the trial that it was, in his view, a mitigating factor.
But you know, we have to be very careful on review of the Rule 50 motion not to sit around and reweigh the evidence. The standard is, as you are obviously well aware, one that's a difficult one for anyone who has lost a jury verdict. If there is a set of facts in the record that the jury could have believed that would have led to its finding, that's the end of it. We have to take all the facts in the light most favorable to the jury's verdict at this point. So the fact that maybe there was this explanation, maybe there was that, doesn't make any difference, as long as the jury could have seen him as not being an honest explainer of why he terminated her.
Well, he presented his reason, and Ms. Applebaum didn't disagree with that. There was no dispute between the two of them as to what occurred. His decision, in fact, was based on her honest acknowledgement that she had breached the confidentiality rule.
Not quite what she said, though. I mean, what she acknowledged was that she confirmed this rumor and said, "I'm not going to talk about it." So it's not like she said, "And here's the story." You know, she said, "I'm not going to talk about it," and the jury might similarly have thought that his decision to characterize that as a breach of the confidentiality policy was a pretext for getting rid of a 60-year-old woman.
Well, she acknowledged that she confirmed the fact that this other employee had been the subject of a suspension.
She acknowledged she acknowledged the quote. You keep putting a characterization on it, but she acknowledged the quote. It was then up for the jury to decide whether it was confirming a rumor, confirming a fact, confirming, you know, anything. She knew. We know that she had heard about it. We know that. We also know that she said she wasn't going to talk. Right?
She went on to say, "But I can't provide any further information."
I wondered why it wasn't, in your view, appropriate to compare the district's decision to suspend Ms. Leon Simpson after she was insubordinate with the decision to fire Ms. Applebaum after she made a remark that may or may not have constituted a breach of confidentiality, because it seems to me that a jury could have seen these two acts as roughly comparable in their gravity.
But this court has instructed, however, that it isn't roughly comparable, it's comparable. Similar circumstances, and an employee with an otherwise impeccable record, Ms. DeLeon Simpson, who was a management employee, at least a professional employee, engaging in some commentary, interplay with her boss that resulted in her demanding that he leave his office, is not comparable, not a comparable circumstance.
You know, you bring something up. Didn't this Applebaum qualify as a management employee?
No, she was not a management employee.
Because your brief notes, the district had a practice of offering these separation agreements to all management employees who were terminated. And, of course, you offered her the chance, to Ms. Applebaum the chance, to sign just such a separation agreement.
That's correct.
Pursuant to which, of course, she would have waived her rights under the ADA. But she didn't qualify as a management employee, is what you're saying.
Correct. Am I at my reserve time point here?
Sure.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Kathy Charlton. I'm one of the attorneys representing Ms. Applebaum. I will address the pretext issue, and my colleague Michelle Samara will address the willful issue. The court has identified the statute, the standard for review. It is whether or not the evidence before this jury was sufficient to support this verdict. We assert that it was. This jury had good reason to suspect that they were being lied to, that there are reasons why they did not believe the reasons stated by this district, namely that the alleged breach of the confidentiality policy was a reason to discharge her. And the reasons for their disbelief, I think, are some that you've already been addressing with opposing counsel. First, the penalty didn't fit the crime, in essence.
There you're up against a lot of law where we say we don't require companies to, or agencies in this instance, to be well managed. If they like to fire people for ridiculous reasons, then maybe they'll suffer in the employment market eventually, because everybody will say this is a terrible place to work, and maybe MMSD is a terrible place to work, but they won't be violating the ADEA or, you know, any of a number of other statutes. If Mr. Schreiber thought that this comment was a breach of the confidentiality policy, why isn't that enough?
It isn't enough because there's other evidence that this jury looked at that gave them the reason to not believe Mr. Schrieffer.
So in other words, you're saying there's evidence that could have allowed the jury to conclude that even he didn't think this lady had breached the confidentiality.
Yes. And I think we start with the point of the flip-flop concerning whether this was termination for performance and the breach, alleged breach, or if it wasn't. And we've had some discussion concerning that. At the time of termination, he says it was performance and it was the breach. But by the time of trial, the performance is dropped out. So the jury can say, wait a minute, why should we believe what he's telling us when he has flip-flopped himself? We've also had some discussion concerning Ms. De Leon Simpson. The fact that she threw her boss out of the office and wouldn't answer his questions posed to her that were work-related, that warranted a five-day suspension. She's 20 years, at the time she was 20 years Ms. Applebaum's junior. That was an act of insubordination. Ms. Applebaum, who had a 15-year career, good work record, worked with confidential information over the years, never had a blemish on that record of dealing with confidential information, is fired for simply saying, confirming that she had heard a rumor, but then acknowledging, I can't talk about that.
Well, suppose at least management thought that she had indeed confirmed the fact of the suspension. Would that make a difference?
This court in Futrell recognized that there has to be a link between the explanation and the causation. So it is important, I think, to note that the explanation itself had to be a believable one for the jury to think that that was the reason for the discharge. And I think the evidence relating to the flip-flops, the similarly situated employees, and the other lists, the hit list, the separation agreement, all of those factors.
Yeah.
You know, you call it a hit list. It seems to me that an employer might have legitimate reasons for using a retirement projection list akin to the one that the district maintained. What was the evidence the district used its list for illicit purposes?
Ms. Applebaum's testimony that was uncontradicted at trial. She indicated that based upon her experience in the department, she believed it was being used inappropriately, and there was no countervailing testimony provided to contradict that.
There was no testimony that the reason we have this list is so that we can plan for future retirement?
There was no testimony concerning the actual use of the list, and no testimony contradicting Ms. Applebaum's statement that it was used to select 8 other employees who were terminated because of their age. Thank you, Your Honor.
I think.
Mr. Mayor.
No, it's all right. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
There is ample evidence here that this jury made a rational inference that the MMSD knew or showed reckless disregard for whether Doris Applebaum was discharged discriminatorily. That evidence focuses first on who Mr. Schrieffer was. He was a labor and employment lawyer for the district. He'd been there 5 years, and his specialty was discrimination law like the ADEA. He wrote and revised and implemented the district's policies on discipline and on performance evaluation. It was his job to know the ADEA and to defend the district's employment decisions. That came through loud and clear to the jury. Having found that the district's proffered reason for discharging Ms. Applebaum was pretextual, the jury reasonably inferred that with Mr. Schrieffer's heightened level of expertise, this discharge was willful. And the jury focused on the identity of Mr. Schrieffer as well as his assertion that performance was a reason for the discharge. He wrote twice that performance offered a reason to discharge Ms. Applebaum, but he never evaluated her.
With respect to the willfulness and the punitive damages aspect of this, I take it there are no objections on this record to the instructions that were given to the jury on these points?
No, Your Honor, there are not.
Okay.
How do you respond to the district's assertion in its reply brief that notwithstanding the contention that older employees were disproportionately targeted for both layoff and termination, that the percentage of workers aged 40 or older in its workforce has remained the same?
Your Honor, that may be the case, but there was also evidence from Mr. Anderson acknowledging that there were discriminatory discharges, that there were discharges in violation of the ADEA. I think that the jury reasonably took the bundle of evidence we have as to pretext and made its inference that there was willful violation here. And let's get back to Mr. Schrieffer's concern about confidentiality. He focused on this fishy notion of a breach, all the while stating that had her performance been exemplary, that might have been a mitigating factor. Ms. Applebaum might have saved her job. The McCabe decision even references this as Mr. Schrieffer's position. Well, is it a one-strike-you're-out policy or not? Are there mitigating factors? He flip-flops again at trial, as we've spoken earlier, that her performance played a zero role. The jury just didn't believe Mr. Schrieffer, and that's its prerogative. As to whether Mr. Schrieffer was the operative decision-maker vis-a-vis the ADEA, we contend that Mr. McCabe was an appellate officer. There's absolutely no evidence to suggest that Mr. Schrieffer's decision was subordinate to that of another. Mr. McCabe made Schrieffer's decision final. Mr. Schrieffer was a significant filter through which McCabe saw Doris Applebaum's discharge. Schrieffer was the attorney and the witness, the sole attorney and the sole witness for the district at the termination hearing. And his conduct and the substance of the decision point to Schrieffer as the operative decision maker. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Zamora. And Mr. Scott, 2 minutes.
I would just make the couple of brief observations here with regard to the appellee's argument. First of all, the evidence that came in with regard to the so-called hit list, on cross-examination, that wound up evaporating to nothing more than pure speculation on the part of Ms. Applebaum that she'd talked to some of these people and apparently they had told her that they thought that they were discriminated against based on age. There was no foundational evidence.
Did you put on any contrary evidence?
With regard to the existence of
on the so-called hit list?
We did. We put on the testimony of Ms. Zaruba, the personnel director, who indicated that was a routine document that was generated for purposes of determining who was going to retire in any given year for budgeting purposes.
But obviously the jury didn't believe that.
Well, there was no basis for them to believe that the so-called hit list was anything other than such a document. There was no evidence to support the notion that it was a hit list. And I would simply point out again that the major concept here is not whether or not Ms. Applebaum believed that she breached confidentiality, but whether Mr. Schrieffer had that honestly held belief. And we think the evidence supports the fact that there is no evidence of intentional age discrimination in this case. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Scott. Thank you, Mrs. Charlton. Thank you, Ms. Samara. Thank you, everyone. This case will be taken under advisement, and this court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning.